Torah for Parshas Vayichi is from Melachim Aleph, from Perek Beis. It's brief. It's 12 sukkim long. And on the surface, there are some overt parallels to the Parsha, in that the Parsha tells us about the death of Yaakov and Yaakov's instructions to his children and his brachos to his children. Haftorah parallels that with the death of David HaMelech and his instructions. But it's not like with Yaakov, where he's talking to all of his children at once with detailed brachos, but it's specifically about the transition that he passes over to Shlomo HaMelech. And there is a kind of an abrupt shift, that first he gives Ruchnius instructions to Shlomo, general Ruchnius instructions, and then it shifts in a very dramatic way to his instructions that he should take care of people, both in the negative and positive sense. He should take care of the people who did wrong and essentially deal with them, as they say euphemistically. And he should also take care, more literally, of people who helped him, like Barzillai. So just to look a little bit at the beginning, so we have the psukim, which are the more general ruchnius instructions. The Haftorah tells us, "Vayikruvu yimei David lamos leitzav Shlomo b'no leimor." He calls his Shlomo over as his days come to a close, and he says, "Anochi holech b'derech kol haaretz." I am going the way of all men. I am almost going to pass away. All right, you got to step up. That's the general instruction. You have to be a man. And then he goes into poetic detail about how he should observe everything. V'shamartes mishmeres Hashem Elokecha lalechesh bidrachav lishmach lukosav mitzvosav mishpatav yedvosav v'kosav zoros moshe l'man taskil es kol asher taseh v'yes kol asher tifne sham. So here he gives them a detailed list of all the different things that you're supposed to do in terms of categories. So you should work on the mitzvos ben adam l'makom and the mitzvos ben adam l'chavero. L'leches bidrachav, as the Radak points out, we know that that's associated with midos. That many times the Chumash tells us v'lach the bidrachav, in one form or another, is an instruction to cultivate midos that are godlike. So essentially, he's telling him that if you create a personality that is both ben mitzvos ben adam l'makom and mitzvos ben adam l'chavero, a full package, so then you are going to be successful. So the word for success here, as it seems, says l'man taskil eis kol asher tase. So it sounds like that's used to mean that you should succeed in everything you're doing, even though the modern usage, that's not how we use the word. Right? When we talk about the maskilim, we didn't mean the successful people. Maskilim means, in one sense or another, to be enlightened. But through Tanakh, you do find meanings like this. You do find lahaskil, meaning to succeed. So the Malbim here explains that it's still not a random usage, that it's saying that in order to be successful, so one needs to use the seichel, and we're conveying that success doesn't just come out of nowhere, but success comes because people act intelligently and because they learn from their circumstances, and essentially there is a link between the two. The Abravanel says differently. He says that the connotation is more literal, that it means to become enlightened. It means to grow intellectually. But the point is that that happens through the Asiyas HaMitzvos, that by performing God's will, by doing what you're supposed to, so you become a more enlightened individual and a more intelligent individual, and therefore that's the intent of the phrasing. And the pasuk goes on, "Leman Yakim Hashem es Devaru Asher Diber Alai Leimor Im Yishmeru Vanecha Es Darkam Alecha Es Lefanai BeEmes BeChalavav BeChal Nafshem Leimor Lo Yikareis Lecha Ish Me'al Kisei Yisrael." So that will fulfill, that will lead to the fulfillment of God's promise that if they behave properly and they observe all the mitzvos, so then the line is going to be guaranteed. So it seems, and there's a lot of discussion about this, it seems like that's a promise that's not conditional in terms of him having to come up with political strategies and other types of devices to secure his rulership here. But nonetheless, the psukim now shift in focus to a much more dramatic kind of context, and what seems like a less spiritual kind of context of essentially the payback, like we said before, both in the euphemistic sense and in the positive sense, to those with whom he has had either negative or positive interactions. So he says here, "Vegama toyadata esa she'asa li Yoav ben Tsruya ha'she'asa l'shnei sarei tzvaos Yisrael la'avner ben Ner u'la'amasa ben Yeser v'yahagim." So you know that Yoav and Shri, you see what he did to me, what he did to these two commanders, Avner and Amaso. He killed them, and therefore acting in peacetime like it's in war, and that must be noted. So the Mefarshim discuss, okay, so Yoav killed Avner and Amasa, so why does David say Asher Asa Li? What did he do to him? So among the interpretations that you find, the Malbim says that since they had made peace with David, so killing them looks bad and undermines the nature of the peace. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, in the comments in the Emes Liakov, he understands that he killed them with a sword, which looks like he's acting on behalf of the Melech, but that's the way the king kills a rebellious person, a Murid B'Malchus, and therefore the Pasuk later on in the Perek says that this is despite the fact that David Shlomo says about David, David didn't know about this. So what's the point of emphasizing that David didn't know about this? The Pasuk that appears after the Haftarah is over. So what's the point of emphasizing that David didn't know about this? Because it created a false impression that he was acting, Yoav was acting on the king's behalf because of somebody who was Marid B'Malchus, and ironically that was an act of Marid B'Malchus, that was Motzi Shemra on David, and therefore that itself is what deserves punishment. The Ralbag understands that he's talking about some other pigia against David, whether it's talking about killing Avshalom or about joining with Adoniah in his rebellion that we read about a few weeks ago. So perhaps that's what's going on, and that prompts the question, so why is it phrased so cryptically, what he did to me and that he killed them? So Rav Rivlin in his Sefer has an essay about this. You can take a look. Just to continue a little bit, so after telling about Yoav, so he says to Shlomo, "Vasista kachach masacha, v'lo sareid sevaso v'shalom shal." So you should do what you think is right here, and make sure that he doesn't die peacefully, etc. Again, these are very dramatic instructions. "V'nei varzilai hagiladi tasa chesed, v'ahiyu ba'ochle shulchanecha, chichein kargu elai, but you should deal nicely with Barzilai Galadi, because, and his children, to deal nicely with his children, because they took care of me when I was running away from Avshalom, so then they should be treated well by you. You also have the responsibility for Shimi ben Gera, ben Hayimini, Ibachurim." So Shimi ben Gera from Benyaminite, from Bahurim, "Vahu Kalalani Klala Nimretzes." He insulted me, he cursed me in a terrible way. "V'yom Lechti Machanayim." "Vahu Yara the Krasi Hayarde." So I swore to him that I will not put you down with a sword. I will not kill you with a sword. So you cannot let him off. So you'll know what to do, and you'll make sure that he doesn't die peacefully. David passed away, and he is buried near David. David al Yisrael, Arboim Shanim v'Chevron Malach Sheva Shanim over Yerushalayim Malach Shloshim v'Shalosh Shanim. So he was the king for 40 years, 7 years in Chevron, 33 years in Yerushalayim. Ushlomo Yashav al Kisei David Aviv v'Tikor Malchuso Ma'od. So Shlomo sat on the throne, and he was very firmly established. So this whole episode with Shimi ben Gera is very difficult to understand what exactly happened, what exactly is going on. That first, David says that, and there you find this in a few places, that David swears not to kill him and protects him, and says that whatever he did because it was part of God's plan. And that's hard to understand, because the Maisa, even if that's true, so it's true about everything, but still people have Bechira Chavshas, and they still deserve to pay a price when they choose to do the wrong thing. And what's the point of such a promise here if ultimately he's instructing Shlomo to take care of him? And again, you'll see before the parak is over that Shlomo carries out all of these tasks. So what exactly is going on as far as both the sparing of Shimi ben Gera till now and then seemingly undermining such a commitment by instructing Shlomo to take care of him? So Rav Rivlin has a discussion about this as well. I'm going to depart a little bit from what he says, there's some overlap, but say it a little differently. That on the one hand, so David had a philosophical approach to what was happening to him, that he recognized that it's not about Shimi, it's about the Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan for him. So on a personal level, he is able to focus on that instead of any individual guilt. And that is despite the fact that he's not a private citizen. Normally we say that Melech Shemachal Kvodo Ein Kvodo Machal, that a king is not allowed to be Mochal on his cover. But David, from his philosophical perspective, did not want to undermine his own understanding, it seems, that what was happening to him was coming from Hashem. This is an important way to be able to perceive how the world treats you. Now in the Tochacha, so we read that we're told that V'nastem V'en Rodef, that among all the bad things that are going to happen, is you'll run away and nobody's chasing. So that doesn't seem like such a scary thing. You would think that that's far better than the alternative. I'd rather, if I'm running one way or another, I'd rather that nobody's chasing me than somebody's chasing me. So what's the tochacha involved in V'nastev V'en Rodef, that no one's chasing you? I thought you could say the pshat is based on a comment of the Sefer Achinuch. I mean, Sefer Achinuch can help you understand what the pasuk is saying. That the Sefer Achinuch talks about the prohibition of lo sikom v'lo sitor, that one is not supposed to take revenge. And that notion of a prohibition to take revenge or even to bear a grudge, there are different suggestions as to why that is. But the way the Chinuch understands it, also philosophically, is that we should recognize that whatever happens to us in this world happens for a reason. It happens because it's God's plan. Whether it's some kind of an onesh, or whether it's a nisayon, or whether it's ultimately what's best for us, or whether it's any mixture of all of the above or any other possibility. But whatever happens, happens because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us. And that being the case, so to focus on the human shaliach, to say, oh, this is all because of you, so that's going to be, by definition, a distraction. That's going to take us away from whatever message is ultimately supposed to come from this experience. So perhaps that's what the pasuk means, v'nasta en v'en rodef, that people very often, when they're suffering, so it gives a psychological release to be able to blame it on someone else. So let's say, for example, if Rahman al-Islam, somebody passes away and leaves the family behind, so it could happen because he had a heart attack, or it could happen because he was hit by a drunk driver, or it could be because he was murdered by someone. So if he was murdered by someone, maybe the family will push for justice and say he should be, the murderer has to be put away, and that will give us some degree of comfort. But Lamaisa, their loss is the same as the other two cases. And say in the case of negligence, the drunk driving, so maybe they can sue, maybe they can do something in between. And in the case of the one who has a heart attack, so there's nobody to go after. So Lamaisa, they all really suffer the same way. They all suffer the loss of this family member. And some circumstances give you a human being to focus on and to go after, and some don't. But Lamaisa, it's really not going to the core of the matter. The matter is that this family lost their relative. It's not going to be any better or any worse because there's somebody that they can blame it on. But the notion of being able to point to a rodef gives us some kind of emotional and psychological relief. So perhaps that's what the Torah is saying, that you'll be running away, and there isn't going to be anybody you can blame your problems on and say, oh, it's all because of him. And especially the context of the Tochacha, that makes a lot of sense, that God is saying, essentially, this is between me and you. There's no human being in between who you can blame for the issue. So perhaps David HaMelech is also perceiving his tzaris that way, and he's saying, I don't want to direct my attention towards the intermediary. I want to focus on how I perceive God's role here, and I'm not going to kill him. I'm not going to take revenge and to give myself that kind of emotional satisfaction. And that was true when he was alive, but Lamaisa is still the case that Melech Shemachal al Kvodo ain't Kvodo Machal, that he still has to stand up for the Melucha. So perhaps that's why he's saying, okay, now that I'm not going to be alive anymore, so Shlomo still has to take action, because ultimately he was guilty, Shimi was guilty, but David HaMelech committed himself to not doing anything about it personally. Perhaps out of this notion that he didn't want to distract himself when dealing with his personal offense from what he could learn from the experience. So in that sense, this also really combines with the parasha, because while the connection to Yaakov's death is the more overt connection to the Haftarah and the parasha, but we also have Yosef acting in such a way as well, that Yosef, I think we mentioned this maybe in Asar B'Tavis, we mentioned this a little bit, but that Yosef is determined to act philosophically throughout, and we find him declaring in last week's parasha and in this week's parasha that this was not you, he says to the brothers, this was God's plan, this is how he had it set up. And in this week's parasha, he says that even though you had negative designs on me, but God had other plans, and he's continuously insistent on focusing on that. And perhaps that's also a kesher between the Haftarah and the parasha, that ultimately that midah of being able to look at the big picture and to not direct yourself at the human shliach who brought about whatever situation has happened. That's perhaps a theme that connects the two, which doesn't absolve that shliach of guilt. We know that that's a notion that we find throughout Chazal, that you can harmonize both concepts at once, that even when the negative actor is carrying out God's plan, that doesn't excuse him for committing those misdeeds. He's still ultimately responsible, and that's a part of the theme that we find here. One of the very interesting topics that comes up in the parasha, just to be aware of, is that in that context of Yosef and his brothers, so after Yaakov dies, Yosef, and this is a little bit, you can find a parallel here, or you could find a contrast, that here we have David HaMelech dying and all of these paybacks taking place. And in the parsha, in the aftermath of Yaakov dying, so there is a question also of payback and what's going to happen. Should the brothers worry that Yosef was going to take action against them? This is 17 years later, after they've been 17 years after they've been reunited. You'd think that they've had the opportunity to smooth things over, to deal with it. But you see that there's still a pachad now after all this time. And once Yaakov is no longer on the scene, that becomes the concern. So the brothers say to Yosef that Yaakov said on his deathbed that you should forgive us, which is striking on a lot of levels because it doesn't seem like Yaakov actually did say that, as far as we can tell. That's a discussion. But the Gemara takes it as a given that he did not say that, the Gemara in Yevamos, and derives from here a fascinating principle that even though it wasn't actually true, it was still legitimate for them to say that because mutter l'shanos b'fnei hashalom, that it's permissible to change the truth in order to accomplish the goal of shalom. And the Gemara quotes that opinion as Rav Nassim, and then quotes Rav Eloy, if I remember correctly, saying a disagreement with that idea, that he doesn't agree that it's mutter l'shanos b'fnei hashalom, but rather it's a mitzvah l'shanos b'fnei hashalom. It's something you must do. You shouldn't get the impression that it's optional. You can choose to do it or not do it, but it's something that you must do. And then the Gemara gives a proof for that from Shaul being told to anoint David HaMelech even when Shaul was going to be very upset. And part of the plan is he's told to take a korban with, take an animal with, so it'll look like he's bringing a korban, when really he's on this mission to anoint David HaMelech. And the Gemara there says also that even HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself did this, that when it comes to when Sarah finds out she's going to have a child, and she says, how could that be? My husband's so old. And then one pasuk later, it's related to her without that reference to, it's related to Avram rather, without that reference to Sarah talking about Avram, but rather making it sound like she's talking about herself. And the Gemara says, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Moshana B'fnei HaShalom. So it's a fascinating topic, the notion of Shinoi B'fnei HaShalom. There is a lot to say about it, but not a lot of time in which to say it, so I'll just suffice with calling your attention to the whole sugya. But ultimately, that's a part of our story as well, that the more one is able to appreciate that what happens to him is a part of a grander plan, and that the human beings who are involved are just in between, even if they are acting of free will, and even if they do deserve consequences for that. But as far as the relationship is concerned, if the one who suffered, in this case Yosef, is able to place it in that context, so that itself is a tremendous step towards Shalom, and a very powerful theme for Sefer Bereishis to end on. So have all these themes in mind as you listen both to the Parsha and the Haftarah, the Shabbos. And God willing, I will see you, I guess, 12 o'clock on Sunday. Okay, very good. Have an amazing Shabbos.